Good morning. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. For those of you who may not know, we're broadcasting from Concordia's Loyola campus in Montreal, Quebec, and right across the street from our studio lies the Perform Center, a research facility that provides an integrated and comprehensive environment to promote healthier lives through changes in behavior and lifestyle. Now, this is achieved by offering research opportunities, education, and programming. Now, joining me in the studio today is a Perform Center researcher and a researcher with McGill's Center for Integrative Neuroscience, Najmeh Khalili Mahane. She is in studio today to discuss her research taking place at Perform, the Gaming Grannies Project, a project that aims to study the potential benefits of games for the aging population. Now, thank you for joining me in the studio today, Najmeh.
Thank you, Allison.
Now, first, I'd love to do a brief introduction on your educational background. Now, it seems you've had a pretty interesting path. Could you tell us about it?
I started my undergrad degree in engineering, in computer engineering, and midway I decided that I wanted to become a journalist. That's just before I migrated to Canada in 1993. And upon arrival in Canada, I realized that my English is not good enough to be a journalist. So I went back to engineering. I studied computer engineering with a focus on electromagnetism, which led me to a project, actually, which I did in the basement of this Loyola building, in the CC building that we are in. And at that time, I was trying to create a digital model, a digital phantom of human head, and looking into the penetration of radio wave frequencies in the head of a potential cellular phone user. So those methodologies, they somehow brought me to the Montreal Neurological Institute. I became a biomedical engineer with specializing in the physics of magnetic resonance imaging. After that, I continued to do a PhD in neuroscience with focusing on the functional magnetic resonance imaging of stress and stress hormones. I did my postdoc looking at the effect of drugs in the brain. I went to the Netherlands to study that, in fact. And in between all of these things, I completed a master's degree in film studies. That was the closest that I could come to journalism and media studies at Concordia again.
Wow. Could you tell us a bit more about the film studies? Because that's quite a different shift. Absolutely.
Yes. So the film studies, it's at the time that I was looking at the effect of motion on functional magnetic resonance images. As a biomedical engineer, I decided that that world was too small. I was spending a lot of time with a little phantom in the MR room, and communication, as I said, it's always been my passion. So I decided, what can I do that is bringing my two interests in visual arts and also in poetry together? And film was the closest interdisciplinary approach to both of those. So I presented myself to, at the time, Mario Falsetto, Professor Falsetto, in one of his classes, and I basically begged him to enroll me in the master's program without any background in humanities. He said, well, you know, not so easy. We have to test you. So they had me take about 12 credits of undergrad courses in film studies, and that's what I did. And I focused in my film studies. I've always been interested in popular cinema as a political agent.
Yeah.
And that's what I focused most of my writings on.
Right on. And did you find that was like a difficult shift to like being so research and science based to doing a humanities degree?
It was a necessary shift for me. Mm-hmm. It was something that allowed me to make sense of the scientific work that I was trying to accomplish. And at the same time, I did my film studies concurrently with doing my PhD on the neuropharmacology of stress and what stress hormones are doing to the brain. So for me, there has to be some form of an application for the science that I'm doing that translates into societal and political action.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to ask if like that work that you did with film studies like helped shape your further research in science in any way.
In fact, it did. And in fact, this is why upon coming back from the Netherlands to Canada, I basically came to Concordia and I realized that Perform Center is, it was a new center at the time. And I knocked on every door and I said, I want to work at Concordia and I need a door at Concordia because this is where I started and this is where I think that I can truly combine these different fields of knowledge that I have been exploring in the past few years. It's not an easy challenge to be interdisciplinarian in general, but I'm very grateful for Perform Center and the opportunities that they are providing me to explore some of these newer ideas of going about brain sciences and also media studies.
Yes, absolutely. It seems that the current project you're working on is very interdisciplinary. Do you actually want to talk about your current study with the Perform Center?
Yes. So at Perform Center, I'm trying to set up what I'm calling a game clinic. And the idea of the game clinic is that usually or traditionally, the games have been studied for their adverse effects, especially on the neuropsychology of younger kids, and specifically for the male population.
Yes.
So they're known to be addictive, and there's quite a bit of clinical work that is showing that this addiction needs to be countered, and it has adverse effects on their lives. But at the same time, there is another growing interest in the benefits of games, especially for the older population. So there seem to be some form of an inverse relationship between the benefits and the gains of games, which is related to age. And what I like to do is to explore the applicability of these gaming strategies for aging population. Now, this work is, of course, pioneered at Concordia through the ACT Network, which is led by Professor Kim Sochek, who is actually indirectly through my readings when I was a film studies student. I do consider her one of my mentors. But what I tried to do is to bring the clinical aspect to this. And we conducted a study, which initially we called it Gaming Grannies,
yes.
But we were criticized for the politically incorrect terminology, and correctly so, by a few of our male participants who said, well, we are not grannies, so we now call it Games for Older Adults. And the idea is that we invited volunteers to participate in three different sessions of playing. And while they were playing different genres of games, we collected physiological and also saliva stress samples in them. And we had them do standard cognitive tests. So the hypothesis that we are trying to test is whether the levels of stress that they have in approaching these games is going to predict their later cognitive performance. The grand objective of this study, I mean, in addition to this quantitative data collection, is also to understand for us as neuroscientists, how this population that we are interested in is approaching the games. What is the affordance of the game to them, and how they evaluate that. And how can we design experiments that are going to be taking into account these important personal and taste preferences in individuals? And in fact, this is what we learned in this study, that not one game fits all.
Yes.
and so this project is now growing. We are taking the advice from our participants, and there is a group of students in the Department of Computation Arts who's implementing a game based on their advice that is going to be more useful to them. And we hope to test it again in them and see if they liked it any better than the ones that we presented to them already.
Right on. And I find this research so interesting, because when you think of video games, the first thing you think of is, yes, young male and playing with like gaming platforms. But often people overlook the older population that are gaming in other ways, you know, through Facebook, online, that type of thing. And so let's talk a little bit about the implications of this study. Now, what are the aims?
In fact, despite popular belief, there seem to be over 50% of the baby boomers who are familiar with computer games.
Yeah.
The problem that exists right now seem to be that there are no games that are designed for this age group. And a lot of time there is some form of dependency between, you know, the older adults who are less technologically savvy on their younger generation to guide them and to orient them with regards to these technologies and the games and the game content. So this is something that I think academically we have started to address. In terms of implications, one of the motivations for doing these things came from realizing that there is a growing volume of literature that are showing the benefits of exercise games or exer games, especially as a strategy, assistive care strategy for the seniors. And the question that I had was, well, how about somebody who's physically unable to perform these exercise games? We know that exercise is good for all sorts of health, preventative health issues, but what about those who cannot exercise? And can we come up with alternative ways of triggering the same kind of neurochemistry in their body that would be beneficial? So I think ultimately there would be two benefits. These games, they're likely to benefit anyone by triggering a cascade of, you know, biochemistry that is going to be hopefully beneficial to the cognitive health, but also they're mood boosters, right? They're one way of relaxing and just being, you know, just being ludic.
Yes.
So that's quite important. And I think that's something that we have learned in this study, that most of these participants, begrudgingly, they would be willing to play some of those brain training games, but they prefer solitaire over anything else.
Yeah.
so to consider the importance of relaxation is also important. And ultimately, yes, so the idea is to provide these strategies as ways of keeping them active cognitively and emotionally satisfied, but also create a bridge between them and the younger generation who is increasingly digitized.
Yes, absolutely.
And do not communicate or do anything without without having... you know, their smartphones.
So. Yes. So what led you to an interest in studying gaming for the aging population?
Again, as I said, I've always been interested in the phenomenology of film and then what that can do. I remember when I was sitting through some of my experimental film classes, at the time, I was realizing that most of our film studies is dominated by some form of a cognitive and psychoanalytical theoretical approach. And at that time, the affective component of cinema was not as much theorized as it started to be so in the past few years. And to me, affect was important. Now, the difference between games and cinema in affective stimulation is that games are interactive and cinema is not. And through these interactions, we as scientists, we also have the opportunity to collect data from individuals who are engaging with this visual cultural product. And you know, as we are moving towards data sciences to be able to acquire data, qualitative data on the behavioral profile of an individual is more important than acquiring data, you know, from one simple questionnaire. So part of the motivation is actually to use games as a mode of data collection, as a digital data collection laboratory.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the challenges that a researcher can face by working with older individuals as opposed to, you know, working with student population?
Well, in our case, we were lucky because, you know, the participants in our study, they were younger than most of us. They had fun with our study. We did not have any dropouts. They were quite capable cognitively and physically to perform a lot of these, which makes us realize that our study is a little bit biased in terms of the kind of older adults that we've been able to reach and that we've been able to recruit into this study. And that is not the reality. There's quite a number of aging population who do not have access to, you know, these electronic media that are advertising these things. And I think that's something in terms of the actual challenges of working with the aging population. We have to take our study to probably homes, to nursing homes, and to different community centers to evaluate it in a broader population. But the simplest thing for anybody who's doing, you know, psychopharmacological studies is that usually older adults, you know, they're taking one or two medications. So interaction between those medications and the biomarkers that we are trying to measure is important to control for. And part of this gaming project that I've started, as I said, it includes data collection strategies mm-hmm. that, for instance, is allowing people to engage with these games at the same time, log and report on their diet, on their sleep, on the medication that they've taken. Mm-hmm. And that is going to provide us better data on the actual benefits, physiological benefits of these games for them.
Yeah. Can you actually go a little bit more in depth with the methodology of the study, like how you obtain like the stress markers?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in this study, upon arrival, we fit them with a wearable device. It's an Empatica E4 wristband that is measuring the galvanic skin response, which is an index of arousal and an index of stress in individuals. At the same time, we collected four saliva samples and repeated blood pressure measurements, just to have a measure and a biomarker of increased activity, physiological activity in these individuals. And at the same time, we had standard cognitive tests, for instance, the Stroop color word attention test and short encoding and recall test, which are known to sort of be sensitive more or less to stress, just to see how their performance is changing from game to game. So this study was designed in the same fashion as we did the pharmacological tests when I was in the Netherlands. So you basically bring people for a placebo session, and then you bring them for applying to different classes of drugs. And in fact, we did the same kind of design in this game study. So we're quite excited about what our analytics are going to return. The data is going to be analyzed soon. The study just wrapped up at the end of this month. So
oh, really?
We'll see what results are going to come out of
oh,
it.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So what is next following this project then? When you get the results of the study, what is next?
So the next step, the next immediate step is that we have to go back to the ethics board and request permission to take this study to, as I said, to community centers and to mm-hmm. nursing homes so mm-hmm. that we are able to reach a larger group of people. A little bit long-term goal is to introduce these technologies to some of the Montreal shelters mm-hmm. and to see whether... because they are the population who do not have access to these smart screen technologies,
absolutely.
Right? And how important might they be for their cognitive and for psychological health? That's something that we don't know, but that's something that we hope our study would convince you know, the powers to be to fund us to take the study further and explore these areas.
Yeah, that's also a thing that many people don't think about, those who don't have access to these games, like... Exactly. So I want to talk a little bit about the Perform Center. And can you speak a little bit about the Perform Center as a facility that you use?
Perform Center is, I have to say, is a unique platform for allowing various modalities of data. And the range of data modalities that you can collect at Perform, they range from very simple behavioral observational you know, data that you can do through community programs to an education programs to very sophisticated, bioimaging platforms. What is interesting about Perform is that all these platforms are provided under the same roof. So a researcher can have the opportunity of using the expertise of the technicians and the specialists of Perform and conduct truly multimodal studies. So in that sense, for me as a neuroscientist to be working in a center where I have access to a very sophisticated exercise facility is important because it's allowing me to work with people who are in the exercise sciences, with people who are in nutrition sciences. So in that sense, it's providing a very, very unique opportunity to do research for the 21st century and in And in this mode of research, we allow the data to speak to us, and we are moving a little bit away from hypothesis-driven research and more into data-driven research. So in that sense, it's quite exciting.
Right on. Now, you said that this study is wrapping up, correct?
Yes.
So you're not currently reaching out for new participants?
We are not.
Okay. So if someone wants to learn more about this study, what would be a good way to reach out to you for anyone who's listening and may be interested?
The best way is to send us an email to media.health@concordia.ca. And if they can contact us, then we would be happy to provide them with any information that request. As I said, we are wrapping up this study right now because the protocol required us to acquire the data during the months of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because the circadian rhythms change with seasons.
Oh.
So we might have another phase of this next year with some modifications,
yeah.
But we wanted to avoid bringing participants to our center in winter and avoid the risks of falling on ice, but also the shorter days and all of those things that would impact the physiological measurements that we did. But I would be happy to answer any questions. Again, media.health@concordia.ca.
Excellent. Now, before we wrap up this interview, is there anything else you'd like to say in regards to your research or anything, whoever may be listening?
Well, I think what I want to say is that I'm looking for collaborators, and I'm looking for collaborators from different fields of research. I have trained as an interdisciplinarian. I know that the academia, as much as it talks about it, is still slow in adopting these modes of, knowledge making and knowledge translation. But I always, in my projects, I think the more the merrier. So if anybody's interested in partnering and advancing this kind of work, then I welcome them and I hope to hear from them.
Excellent. And I just want to say, as someone who did her undergraduate studies in science, I did a neuropsychology degree, and then now I'm in the arts, I find this type of interdisciplinary research so interesting. So thank you so much for joining me in the studio this morning.
Thank you so much, Alison. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. So you have been listening to CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Orpheus went leaping through the field.